Hello there, everyone. This is Craig with Life Care Counseling, and I hope that you all are doing well today. I want to talk to you a little bit about addiction. Now, on the last podcast or audio clip, I had talked about willpower, and specifically, I talked about habit loops also in there. Now, in order to talk about addiction, you also have to talk about habit loops. So, first of all, like I know that a lot of people, they have different ideas that come in their head, even like whenever you say the word addiction. And all those are very valid. A lot of times whenever we think of addiction, we think of someone that gets overwhelmed or overrun by this compulsion to do things, whether or not that is a behavior or seek some type of drug or anything like that. They do that at their own expense or at the expense of things that they have built, whether that being a social network, whether or not that be their health, exercise routine, like I said, relationships, family, and it can even go so far as to supersede, an addiction can go so far as to supersede even basic needs of livelihood. Whereas you are sacrificing shelter, food, water, and companionship in order to fulfill this compulsion, this desire for whatever it is. So there's a particular reason why addiction happens. So like if we just rewind for, let's say like anywhere in the mark between like over 50 years ago even, we would have a very different idea of what addiction is. The reason being is obviously through research we have found out a lot more. Addiction, we find out, is a lot more it's a lot more ingrained in us. Human beings, we are geared towards becoming addicted to things. And the reason this is because the addiction component of who we are really is formed based on these habit loops. Now, like I said, with the last episode, we talked about habit loops. Habit loops are a part of normal brain development. They help automate tasks, you know, that are wide-ranging, right, from driving a car to being able to sit down in a chair to even certain speech patterns. So habit loops help us automate tasks so that we don't have to really put a lot of brain power, a lot of willpower into doing anything. Now, addiction is a different type of habit loop that is developed, and it has the same tendencies, right? So a typical habit loop will have a cue or a trigger, and then you'll go through a process, which a lot of times that process can be unconscious. It's like unconsciously motivated or propelled unconsciously. And then it will have some type of resolution or some type of conclusion or some type of achievement once the process is complete, in which usually it's followed by a good feeling, especially in the case of addiction, right? So the type of addiction that I had the most experience with is drug addiction. So I'm going to talk mostly about drug addiction, although a lot of other types of addiction, they function in very much the same way. Like if you look at it from a neurological level. Now, a lot of times whenever we look at drug addiction, some of the main components that are involved is, or one of the things that we really find out is that there are different types of addiction. Now, if any of you guys have watched the TV show My Strange Addictions, it wouldn't take you very long to figure that out, that people get hooked on doing the strangest things, even if it doesn't seem like it has any type of chemical way of being able to offer us some type of reward. Now, that being said, drugs, they do offer a way of being rewarded on a very chemical level. So most drugs, they do have some type of reward factor. And just for the sake of this, talking about addiction in general, we're going to talk about a couple areas of the brain that I will name on a very simplistic basis, right? So we have the pleasure center of our brain, which is activated anytime that we do something, guess what? Pleasurable, right? So I really like eating pizza. So that means that whenever I eat pizza, as soon as the pizza is on my tongue and I start to taste it, my taste buds will send signals to my brain, which my brain will interpret as this is good stuff, I like this, and it will activate the pleasure center in my brain to help keep me eating it so that I'll continue to eat it because I know that it's something that I like. Now, this circuitry is normal. It's what helps us to start to repeat behaviors that allow for successes. It's one of the reasons that the easiest way to train animals and to train human beings usually is to provide positive reinforcement. And that is because if we have that activation of our pleasure center, which is typically activated due to an increase in what's called dopamine levels. So dopamine is a neurochemical that is normally associated with a short-term positive feeling or good feeling. Now, dopamine does a lot more in the brain, but for strictly this, we'll kind of talk a little bit about how dopamine is related to improving positive or good feelings, and it's released in the brain. So, and it's released in the pleasure center as well. So if I go ahead and eat my pizza and my brain's like, oh, this is good, and the pleasure center is activated, there is an increased level of dopamine that's released in my brain, and that increased level of dopamine will compel me to want to consume more pizza because of that increased level of dopamine. Now, the same thing happens whenever you might exercise and you feel good after an exercise, and endorphins are released, right? Which give you that positive feeling, and you start to chase that quote unquote high that you get from that. And whenever we talk about a high, that just means there's an escalation in neurotransmitters being released. And usually you're talking about transmitters that make you feel good, like dopamine and endorphins, and of course, even other ones like serotonin, whenever they're released, can all make you start to feel good. Now, getting a little bit back to addiction, so a habit loop starts to form around a behavior and it becomes reinforced again and again every time that you do it, right? So let's use a drug, for instance. Let's use alcohol, really, one of the most addictive substances that we know. And whenever you consume any type of alcohol, one of the things that can happen is that your pleasure center will start to activate. And once it starts to activate, a higher level of dopamine will be released. And whenever that higher level of dopamine is released, you will be more compelled to continue to consume alcohol. Right? So, one of the important things to consider with addiction is that there are tons of different components, right? So, there's this habit loop component that we're talking about right now, whereas it gets reinforced time and time and time again. But there's also this, which is also includes, in my mind at least, that neurochemical component. Whereas you have this fluctuation, this increase of dopamine that compels you to want to do it again. Now, there's another part too that has to play, and that's genetics. So if you are from a family or if you're in a family that has a history of substance abuse or addictive behavior, then you are more likely to become addicted. It affects you differently. So, for example, if you come from a family that, of alcoholics maybe, your mother or father was an alcoholic, then you inherently, whenever you consume alcohol, it would taste different to you than another person. It would taste better than it would for a typical person that maybe is from a non-addictive family. So you'd actually have a higher chance of feeling even greater reward, thus a higher chance of developing that addiction. Right? So we find out that these habit loops, while they aren't necessarily ingrained in us in some type of way that is like instinctual, they do have a higher percentage of developing it depending on like what happens to our parents, right? Like we know that trauma can travel down family lines. And the same thing happens with addiction. So it's just increasing your chances of becoming addicted. Now, that doesn't mean that you're guaranteed that or anything, because we do have a lot of fluctuation with genetics, especially whenever considering epigenetics. And of course, the way that you're raised will also represent that. Like, for example, let's say that you are born of a family of addicts and they decide to get clean and they are sober for a substantial amount of time and they really ingrain in you how dangerous substance use can be, and you adhere to their warnings and you don't use anything. While you may still have the genetic makeup that would make you more predisposed to that, since you've never been exposed to it, then you'd be more likely to be okay. But there is that predisposition. So there is a genetic component as well. So the other component I would have to say is that it doesn't always matter if you consume something, so like let's say a drug, and it increases your feeling of pleasure. It doesn't always matter that that happens, because it can also be reinforced in other ways. And in the field, we kind of like to distinguish it between two things, and whether or not that that's really relevant or not, I just feel like it's worth mentioning. So you have what we call physical addiction, where your body physically becomes dependent on it. So whenever you use a drug so much, the very cells in your body start responding to it. And whenever it's starved of that drug, then they respond in a very real way by making you sick and convulse sometimes. You can have feverish symptoms. You can have all kinds of terrible symptoms that are called withdrawal symptoms. And for some drugs, such as like alcohol or benzodiazepines, or I think even barbiturates, I'd have to check and make sure with that. They can all have lethal withdrawal symptoms. So like if you abuse them for a long period of time, then all of a sudden you stop cold turkey and you don't go through like a medical detox or anything, you can actually die from them, which is why there are so many detox centers around, especially for alcohol, since that is one of the most likely drugs that you'll die from the withdrawal. But however, most drugs, you don't die from the withdrawal, and what you do is you experience some type of withdrawal symptom, and that can go from very mild withdrawal symptoms, such as marijuana, which will be like headaches, sometimes difficulty sleeping, slight irritability. That can happen in anywhere from a day to several weeks, even after the last time that marijuana is consumed. And that's simply because marijuana is a very dynamic drug in the way that it affects us, and it stays in our system for a very long period of time. And at some point or another, I'll have a episode that'll talk more about some of these drugs specifically, including one about marijuana. But it can range from those to even something like opiates, right, like heroin or different painkillers. And whenever we go through withdrawals from them, where it's very feverish, you can convulse, you could throw up, you could have like your body can tremor to shoot some withdrawals, like people can have seizures, and although that's not as common. But the whole idea is that whenever you go through withdrawals, it's because from a very, very, from a very small level, like a cellular level, your cells will actually react to it, your entire body, and will react to the lack of that drug. So you have that like very basic physical addiction to it, but you also have like a psychological addiction to some type of drugs, right? Where they might not necessarily be physically addicting. And this is where like that TV show, My Strange Addiction, that I talked about earlier really comes in, because a lot of the things that those people may become addicted to on that TV show, and there are a lot of strange things. If you're interested, I'd suggest you look it up. A lot of strange things that people become addicted to, and those are more of the psychological side of things, where the things that they're doing don't typically create any type of compulsion or addictive behavior, but for some reason or another with them, it creates the same release of dopamine, and sometimes the same neurochemical reinforcement that happens, and thus the addictive behavior starts to emerge. Now, with addiction, the more and more you do the behavior, the more and more ingrained it normally gets. And that's what makes it very difficult. That's one of the reasons that addiction is one of the hardest things to kick. And for you that may be listening to this, some of you maybe have an addiction, some of you maybe don't. But I'm one of the people that would make the argument that most of us do have an addiction. It's part of who we are as human beings. I can sit here in front of you and say with some confidence that I have an addiction. I have an addiction to caffeine. I have to have my coffee in the morning. And I definitely have an addiction to sugar, which is probably, in my opinion, one of the most prevalent addictions, especially here in America. And that being said, I'm not necessarily trying to make a case that all of us are addicts or anything like that, but we definitely do have that tendency in human beings. And how we understand addiction now is that we consider it more like a disease, which actually, if you think about it, makes total sense. That whenever we start to develop this compulsion, it starts to erode away all judgment. In fact, there's some really good research about this. Whenever you think about the habit loop, right? So you get the cue or the trigger, and whatever it may be, let's use alcohol addiction for a minute, right? Let's say that I'm used to having some beers after work every day. So as soon as I get home, I get hit with this cue or this trigger. Shoot, it may even happen as soon as I get off work, where I'm like, all right, like this is normally what I do, is I have, you know, a beer, a few beers, whatever that may be after work. So I go downstairs, I get some beers, and then I start drinking them. That's all part of the process, right? It's more of an unconscious thing, which means there's not a lot of deliberation. I'm not sitting there thinking, should I really have some beers tonight or should I not? Or like, I just kind of automatically go and do it. Now, that doesn't mean I don't have control over some things. Like maybe I choose the type of beer that I have or where I want to sit or what I want to do while I'm consuming that beverage. But it means that it makes it a lot easier for me to go and do that. I'm not really thinking about it as much as I could be. All right. So that's what's kind of known as that process of the habit loop. And this becomes so automatic in drug addiction. And the challenge with it really is that process does not typically go away. So like I said in the other episode, habit loops, you can't really do very much about stopping habit loops once they're developed. They're just there. The most effective way of dealing with a habit loop is changing it up in some way. But we'll kind of get to that. So you run into this challenge where you are in this habit loop, and then after you complete whatever the habit loop is, that's whenever the success happens. And a lot of times with addiction, you can develop a lot of different habit loops. So like after I finish the beer, right, I may be triggered. Okay, finished with a beer. What do I normally do after I'm finished with beer? I get another beer. So then I get triggered by that, and I go through the process, getting another beer, drinking the beer. And then after I finish the beer, I'm achieved, and then I get triggered again and go get another one. So this can become a very detrimental process after time, right? It isn't necessarily like it happens the first time, right? But a lot of times addiction can even start with the first time. It starts with that ingraining process of developing that habit loop, that compulsion, and it starts to build in those components that become more and more and more automated. And they become so automated that we actually find out through various research, actually a lot of the research is done with not only alcohol addiction and cocaine addiction, but interesting enough, gambling addiction, is that whenever we get that trigger, the process is so unconscious that our ability to actually stop ourselves from doing that is almost non-existent. Which means that we almost have no time to actually intervene. Now, this is super important, especially when you talk about drug addiction, because like for a typical person, and the days always vary, right? Like some people say it's like 21 days to develop new habits. Some people say 2 weeks. Some people say like a couple months. For drug addiction, in order for your brain to even recover from the effects, the initial effects of any type of addictive behavior like drug addiction, it usually takes several months. You're talking 2 to 3 months even for your brain to get on this like recovery train to returning back to normal functioning. That is how ingrained addictions are. So going a little bit back to how about how addictions are like diseases, so there is a predisposition for us to develop them. It's also extremely difficult for us to manage them due to the unconscious nature that they can develop. And because of this, it is a very good chance that someone who's addicted to anything can relapse. Relapse rates are very high and it's very common, right? So I say that because any of you that may be an addict yourself or know of anyone that may be an addict, it's just some, that's part of it. Relapse is part of it and it sucks and it's horrible, right? But if you think about cancer, every person that develops cancer at some point or another, if they do not die beforehand, will relapse. That's how diseases work. You can't get rid of them. And this is true with addiction. You can't get rid of it. It's always there. Even if a person is sober for 20 years, if they get hit with that trigger hard enough, their brain will revert back to those same habit loops, those same functions. Now, they may be more equipped, they may have more space in between that trigger, that cue, and the process to make a decision, which is what you really aim for. But those same circuits are there. And there's really a lot of great research with cocaine addiction with this, is you find out it doesn't matter how long you've been sober. That's why if any of you guys have ever been a part of some wonderful programs like AA and NA, so like Alcohol Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, and of course there's like Heroin Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, there's Marijuana Anonymous, there's Sex Addiction Anonymous, there is Gambling Anonymous, there's all these different organizations that are dedicated towards helping manage this addiction because it's a disease and it can only be managed. Just like cancer has to be managed through regular doctor visits, a lot of times medication, improving health, like different regimens for possibly diet and exercise in order to reduce the chances of relapse or to hold off the relapse as long as you can. So, and of course, addiction, the disease of addiction, will eventually kill you, especially if you're talking about substance abuse addiction. That's because the compulsion to move, to have this addiction consume your life gets more and more and more and more. Now, if you're talking specifically about drug use can kill people directly through overdose, or it can kill people very indirectly by sometimes revealing or uncovering mental health issues, or sometimes even escalating mental health issues to the point where a person may take their own life. Or they may become so isolated and so desolate that they slowly waste away from their substance use. They can even, through a series of impaired decision making from substance use, end up getting themselves in a situation where they die. So it is a very lethal disease. And that doesn't mean that everyone that gets becomes an addict will die from their addiction, right? Some people that get cancer, they die from a car accident or whatever it may be, or they may be in remission, right? And there's definitely a remission with addiction as well. But that management component is so important because there's always that possibility of relapse. So, like I said, the only way to combat an addiction is to, you can't destroy the habit loop. So you substitute it. And that's where you get these wonderful programs like AA and NA that do such a good job, is because they do such a great job of replacing that habit loop. So whenever you get a cue or trigger that you want to drink, right? So like let's go back to that example that get off work. All right, what do? I know that that's the trigger that whenever I get home, I want to drink and I may not have any alcohol there. But I may want to go to a bar, so what I do instead? I go to a meeting. I call my sponsor. So I do something else. Even though the trigger is still there, it's the same trigger. I start changing the process. I start changing what happens. So every time that that trigger shows up, if I have a new process that I start to do, and the more and more I do it, it becomes more and more unconscious, it becomes more and more automatic, and you substitute whatever that is. So that's like a very important component of addiction treatment, is being able to manage the addiction by substituting it. That's one of the reasons why in addiction, if you have a social model of addiction, which means that you're getting involved in things, you're doing things with people, right? Whether or not that's a program, whether or not that's being more engaged in your community or whatever that may look like, whenever you are more engaged with other people and you have a strong social network, you're much more likely to be able to manage your addiction, right? And of course, in addiction, there's medications in order to help as well. Since a lot of times, and it's kind of like the chicken or the egg thing, right? So a lot of us are predisposed to having any type of mental health issue. Now, some of us, we can manage it on our own, and that's cool. Some of us, we're not able to. And that's because mental health is a, like I said, it's kind of a part of who we are as a people. And whenever we use drugs, sometimes that brings them to the surface. And sometimes whenever we use drugs, that makes mental health issues that were already there even more prevalent, even though for a short period of time. Normally, whenever we use any type of drugs specifically, and other types of addiction as well, that makes us, it reduces our mental health issues. Like, for example, if I have a lot of anxiety and I decide to drink a lot, or I decide to smoke, or, you know, I decide to use whatever drug it may be, then I may get some type of relief from that anxiety for a short period of time. Whereas in the long term, it becomes more and more difficult to manage my anxiety. And we'll be able to talk more about anxiety specifically later, and even how that impacts addiction. But a lot of times with addiction, that also comes with the possibility of having to take medications, whether or not that's to have to take medications for any mental health issues that come up, right? And this is all part of the management, right? If you have depression, and it is something that has been ongoing issue for you, and it's very dangerous to leave depression go without treating it. A lot of times it's due to whatever's going on in the brain. Depression is a little bit different, right? It's just like addiction in the way that it's something that can happen in the brain, and normally your brain would do X, Y, and Z, but for some reason it's not. And whether or not that's because of an event that happened, or whether or not that's just because you're more predisposed to it, that means that you have to manage that depression. And whether that's using coping skills or social resources that are available to you, people that you know to talk to, therapy, and a lot of times you have to also manage that with medication, is also sometimes an important component with that. And that's just to kind of get you to what it is like at that normal level. And I would compare most mental health issues with diseases as well, where there's this huge management component. And that's definitely true with addiction. Like, you have to be able to manage it somehow because it's so ingrained and it's so automatic. So really quickly, just like the time left, I want to tell you guys a little story, right? So a lot of the addiction work I've done has been with adolescents with substance abuse issues. And I had this girl, she's 6 months sober, right? So she's a good amount of time sober. And she, a lot of times with addiction, we talk about like, hey, you got to avoid certain people, places, or things, especially at the beginning. And she was doing a good job with that. After 6 months of sobriety, she decided to introduce herself back into with some of those people in a place, right? So she went over to a friend's house, and whenever she went over there, there were some pills. She was a pill abuser, and she would crush up the pills and snort them. So whenever she went over there, she's talking to him, and you know, they're just talking, like, whatever. And then he looks over, and he's like, what are you doing? And she looks down, and she had crushed up a couple of these pills that he had there, and she was already putting them in a line to snort them. And then she's like, oh my gosh. And like, she ended up leaving, and she did not end up relapsing there. But she told me a story, and she said, you know, Craig, I don't even remember doing that. I don't remember taking the pills out. I don't remember crushing them. I don't remember lining it up or anything. If he had not told me, like, what are you doing? I would have done it. I would have probably snorted those, and I wouldn't have even been able to stop it. The reason I tell that story is because addiction becomes so automatic, even if we don't want to do it, even if we don't want to follow through with it. Sometimes we don't have as much control as we think we do with it. It becomes so automatic and becomes so ingrained. And I want you to know that, because guilt and shame are powerful things, and most addicts feel this, right? Most people feel this in some way or another. But most addicts feel this because they feel like they should have more control. However, research tells us there isn't really a lot you can do with that control. There isn't a lot of willpower that goes along with it. The only thing that you can do that really works is being able to manage the addiction and substitute those habits, and being able to plan for what happens when you're in that risky situation, right? And she went in there without a plan, and thankfully things just worked out. However, in order to address an addiction, a lot of times you need support. And support can look like a lot of different things. It can look like support from family, from friends, from a treatment team, right? From AA, NA, sponsorship, right? Which sponsorship, if you don't know, it's AA and NA. They pair you with another addict there that has been sober for a while, and they help you go through what's called step work. But you call them most every day. You talk with them about things that are going on. So they kind of, it's like a partner system or a buddy system, and it's very effective about helping people manage their addiction, right? And the cool thing about AA and NA and all the letter and A's, as it were, is that they're completely free, and they have a huge network. If you go to AA.org or NA.org, you can find some local meetings that you could always go to if you're seeking help. Now, addiction is a very ingrained thing, and I'll talk more about addiction, right? I have a lot of experience with it. But I also want to let you know that if you have any specific questions, and I know that this was just a little over a half hour I'm talking about it, and there's just so much more information about it. There's just so much more to know and to learn. But of course, if you have any questions or anything that I may be able to answer or help you with, I would love to do that. Addiction is something I really like talking about, something that I really like working with people that have addictions. Because there's not only a certain motivation, but like I said, I think it's a very human thing, because I think most of us go through our own addictions. We all have some type of addiction, I believe, in our life. And so I think it's just a very common struggle. But like I said, if you have any questions or anything that I can answer, then please get in contact with me at Craig, C-R-A-I-G, at LifeCareCounselingSTL.com, or you can visit my website, which if you're listening to this, then you must be on in some way, or you probably know about, which is at LifeCareCounselingSTL.com. And again, I hope this podcast was helpful to you, and I hope that it finds you having a good day, and I hope that you have a good rest of your day. Thanks for tuning in.